Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I was carried face down through the street by my cuffed arms and legs while yelling that I had a brain injury and was disabled. I now cannot lift my arms normally. I was never asked for ID, never told I was under arrest, never read my rights, and never charged with a crime.
As protests continue in Minnesota over the Trump administration's deadly immigration crackdown, we'll speak to Alia Rahman, a disabled U.S. citizen in Minneapolis. ICE smashed her car window, dragged her out, and detained her. She was heading to a medical appointment. Then, President Trump is refusing to apologize after posting a video that depicted the Obamas as apes. He only deleted it after bipartisan outcry.
Mr. President, a number of Republicans are calling on you to apologize for that post. Is that something you're going to do?
No, I didn't make a mistake.
Plus, we look at the Winter Olympics in Milan, Italy. Vice President J.D. Vance was booed during the opening ceremony, and thousands protested in the streets over the U.S. sending ICE agents to the Games. We'll also get an update on Gaza. The Rafah crossing has reopened, but few people are being allowed through. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh. In Minneapolis, at least 50 people were arrested outside a federal building as they were marking the one-month anniversary of Rene Good's fatal shooting by an immigration officer. Rene Good's wife, Becca Good, issued a statement over the weekend saying, quote, "You know my wife's name and you know Alex's name, but there are many others in this city being harmed that you don't know. Their families are hurting just like mine, even if they don't look like mine," end quote. This is Annie Ganger, Rene Good's sister.
No matter the adversity she faced, Rene always remained so tender and open and was a caretaker and protector. I'd like to acknowledge that this type of violence isn't new and how unfair it is that the way someone looks garners more or less attention. And I'm so sorry that this is the reality.
Meanwhile, Jim Stolle, the chief counsel for ICE in Minnesota, resigned from his position after 31 years on the job. This comes as government prosecutors are facing a surge of immigration cases that are overwhelming the court system. Last month, the top federal judge in Minnesota, Patrick Schiltz, criticized ICE for violating more than 100 judicial orders, saying, quote, "ICE has likely violated more court orders in January 2026 than some federal agencies have violated in their entire existence." In more news from Minnesota, a Mexican immigrant whose skull was broken in eight places during his arrest by ICE last month has described harrowing details of his ordeal. Alberto Castañeda Mondragon says he was violently pulled from a friend's car outside a St. Paul shopping center by four masked men, thrown to the ground, handcuffed, then punched and struck in the head by a steel baton. He says he was then dragged into an SUV and taken to an ICE jail inside the Whipple Federal Building, where he says he was beaten again. Castañeda Mondragon's injuries are inconsistent with ICE officers' claims to the nurses who treated him that he, quote, purposefully ran headfirst into a brick wall. In related news, more than 1,000 workers at Google have signed a petition calling on their company to cancel contracts with ICE and Customs and Border Protection. They write, quote, "Google is now a prominent node in a shameful lineage of private companies profiting from violent state repression. We must use this moment to come together as a Google community and demand an end to this disgraceful use of our labor," unquote. In Massachusetts, a federal judge has put a temporary hold on data sharing between the IRS, Social Security Administration, and ICE. In a statement, the New York Immigration Coalition applauded the order, writing, quote, "With tax season here, this ruling ensures that immigrant families can meet their civic obligations without fear of retaliation or surveillance." President Trump is refusing to apologize for publishing a racist video that depicts former President Obama and Michelle Obama as apes. Trump's account on his social media platform, Truth Social, posted the video late Thursday night, where it remained for 12 hours before it was deleted around noon on Friday. It prompted rare criticism of the president from Republicans, including Tim Scott, the Senate's only black Republican. Scott said, quote, "It's the most racist thing I've seen out of this White House," unquote, adding that he was praying it was fake. But speaking to reporters aboard Air Force One, Trump defended his actions.
Mr. President, a number of Republicans are calling on you to apologize for that post. Is that something you're going to do?
No, I didn't make a mistake. I mean, I look at a lot of thousands of things. At the beginning of it, it was fine. They had that one post, and I guess it was a takeoff. By the way, a lot of people covered. If you look at where it came from, I guess it was a takeoff on The Lion King. And certainly it was a very strong post in terms of voter fraud.
The Justice Department is said to allow Congress access to unredacted files related to the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein starting today. Epstein's associate, the convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell, is also set to testify before the House Oversight Committee in a virtual deposition closed to the public. Maxwell's lawyers have indicated that she will invoke the Fifth Amendment and decline to answer questions. Attorney General Pam Bondi is expected to testify on Wednesday over the Justice Department's handling of the Epstein files. It comes as Republican Congressmember Thomas Massie is pushing for Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick to resign after emails revealed Lutnick lied when he claimed to have ended his relationship with Epstein in 2005. At the National Prayer Breakfast last week, President Trump called Congressmember Massie a moron. Meanwhile, in the UK, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer's chief of staff, Morgan McSweeney, has resigned over his role in recommending the appointment of Peter Mandelson, a friend of Jeffrey Epstein, as ambassador to the United States. Israel's Security Cabinet has approved new rules to tighten Israeli control over the occupied West Bank. The rules will make it easier for Israeli settlers to buy land in the occupied West Bank and give Israeli officials stronger powers to enforce laws on Palestinians in the area. Meanwhile, a new report by The Intercept has uncovered the Pentagon's $210 million deal to buy advanced cluster munitions from an Israeli weapons manufacturer. The U.S. will pay the Israeli company Tomer over a period of 3 years to produce new 155-millimeter shells containing smaller submunitions. The cluster munition monitor has recorded nearly 25,000 cluster munition injuries and deaths since the 1960s, the vast majority from unexploded remnants. Iran's foreign ministry says it's open to a deal to limit its ability to enrich uranium in exchange for relief from sanctions. But Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said any new agreement must include the right to enrich nuclear material for peaceful purposes. His comments came after U.S. and Iranian diplomats held indirect talks in Oman on Friday as U.S. warships gathered within striking distance of Iran amid Trump's threats of a new attack.
Iran's power lies in its ability to resist bullying, hegemony, and pressure from others. The U.S. and their allies are afraid of our atomic bomb, but we are not looking for an atomic bomb. Our key strength is the power to say no to the great powers.
In more news from Iran, security forces have announced the arrest of four senior opposition politicians, including the head of the Reformist Front, widening a crackdown on dissent that's left thousands of people dead since protests erupted in late December. Those arrested face charges of plotting to overthrow Iran's Islamic regime. Separately, the jailed Nobel Peace Laureate Narges Mohammadi has ended a hunger strike after an Iranian court on Saturday sentenced her to another 7 years in prison. She was on medical leave from prison in December when she was arrested at a memorial service for a well-known human rights lawyer who died under mysterious circumstances. Mohammadi has already spent over a decade behind bars. A Hong Kong court has sentenced media mogul Jimmy Lai to 20 years in prison. Lai had already been in detention for more than 5 years while serving a separate prison term on fraud charges. Lai was arrested back in 2020 under the national security law that China implemented in Hong Kong following the pro-democracy protests in 2019. He was the founder of the Hong Kong newspaper Apple Daily, which ceased operations in 2021 after police arrested the paper's employees and froze its assets. In Sudan, a drone attack by the paramilitary group RSF hit a vehicle carrying displaced families on Saturday, killing at least 24 people, including 8 children. The attack took place close to the city of Ar-Rahad in North Kordofan province, according to the Sudan Doctors Network, a group tracking the country's civil war. The conflict in Sudan is the world's largest humanitarian crisis, with more than 40,000 people killed and more than 14 million people forced to flee their homes. A federal judge has unfrozen $16 billion in funds withheld by President Trump for rail infrastructure between New York and New Jersey. Friday's court order came as President Trump reportedly told Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer that he would release the funds if Schumer supported renaming Dulles International Airport in Virginia and Penn Station in New York City after him. New Jersey's acting attorney general, Jennifer Davenport, issued a statement saying, quote, "The Trump administration must drop this campaign of political retribution immediately and must allow work on this vital infrastructure project to continue." In Italy, thousands of people marched through the streets of Milan on Saturday to protest the environmental, social, and economic impacts of the Winter Olympics. They're also objecting to Israel's participation in the Games and the presence of immigration and customs enforcement agents with the U.S. delegation. Police fired tear gas and water cannons as some protesters approached a hockey venue. Inside the Games, U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance was met with a chorus of boos when he appeared at the opening ceremony on Friday evening. This is how the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation covered the brief on-camera appearance by J.D. and Usha Vance.
Individual sport, what an honor for her.
There is the Vice President J.D. Vance and his wife Usha. Oop. Those are a lot of boos for him.
Those boos were not audible in video of Vance's appearance broadcast across the United States by NBC and then widely shared online, including by the White House's social media account. And Puerto Rican superstar Bad Bunny has made history as the first artist to perform a Super Bowl halftime show almost entirely in Spanish. Bad Bunny's performance came a week after he publicly criticized Ice at the Grammys during his victory speech for Album of the Year. During the halftime performance, Bad Bunny held a football that read, quote, "Together we are America." The performance ended with Bad Bunny holding a light blue pro-independence variation of the Puerto Rican flag. He was followed by dancers holding the flags of every country in the Americas.
God bless America! Sea Chile, Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Bolivia, Perú, Ecuador, Brasil, Colombia, Venezuela, Guyana, Panamá, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, México, Cuba, República Dominicana, Jamaica, Haití, las Antillas, United States, Canadá. A my motherland, mi patria, Puerto Rico. Seguimos aquí.
President Trump called the performance absolutely terrible, one of the worst ever, and an affront to the greatness of America. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh.
And I'm Amy Goodman in Los Angeles, just back from the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, where the film Steal This Story, Please, about Democracy Now! Just won the Social Justice Award. We're looking forward to theatrical release on April 10th in New York, and then in the days after that, here in Los Angeles and in San Francisco and beyond. Yes, this is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We begin today's show in Minneapolis, where at least 50 protesters were arrested outside the Whipple Federal Building this weekend as they marked 1 month since the fatal shooting of Renee Good, the 37-year-old mother of three killed by an ICE agent on January 7th. The Whipple Federal Building has been a staging ground for federal immigration agents deployed to the Twin Cities, as well as at the heart of ongoing protests against Trump's raids. Good's fatal shooting, as well as the killing just days later of Alex Preti, a 37-year-old ICU nurse who worked in the Minneapolis Veterans Healthcare System, have sparked nationwide protests in response to Trump's immigration crackdown.
Renee Good's wife, Becca Good, issued a statement over the weekend saying, quote, "You know my wife's name and you know Alex's name, but there are many others in this city being harmed that you don't know. Their families are hurting just like mine, even if they don't look like mine," unquote. And this is Annie Ganger, Nay Good's sister.
"No matter the adversity she faced, Renee always remained so tender and open and was a caretaker and protector. I'd like to acknowledge that this type of violence isn't new and how unfair it is that the way someone looks garners more or less attention. And I'm so sorry that this is the reality."
Trump's deployment of federal agents in Minneapolis and across U.S. cities has continued to raise scrutiny over the violent use of force by the Department of Homeland Security officers who've been involved in the shootings of at least 13 people since September, including of U.S. citizens. At least four of those shootings have been fatal, including Renee Good, Alex Preti, and Silverio Villegas Gonzalez, a 38-year-old father from Mexico, fatally shot by federal immigration agents in a Chicago suburb last year. He was unarmed.
Last week, the brothers of Renee Good, Brent and Luke Ganger, testified at a hearing held by congressional Democrats. Among others who testified was Martin Daniel Rascón, who was shot at by border agents in California while driving with his family. Marimar Martinez, who was shot five times by a federal immigration agent in Chicago last year. And Aliyah Rahman, who was violently dragged out of her car by federal immigration officers in Minneapolis after they smashed the car window. Aliyah Rahman will join us live in a minute. But first, this is a portion of her congressional testimony last week.
"My name is Aliyah Rahman, and I am a resident of South Minneapolis. I'm a Bangladeshi American, born in northern Wisconsin, and I'm a disabled person with autism and a traumatic brain injury. Not all autistic brains do this, but mine fixates on sounds, numbers, and patterns. And while what the world saw happened to me exactly 3 weeks ago today on video was a terrible violation, it is still nothing compared to the horrific practices I saw inside the Whipple Center. So I am here today with a duty to the people who have not had the privilege of coming home, and I offer this data because these practices must end now. On January 13th, on the way to my 39th appointment at Hennepin County's Traumatic Brain Injury Center, I encountered a traffic jam caused by ICE vehicles and no signs indicating how to get around it. I had not wanted to pull into a blocked, chaotic intersection, but verbally agreed to do so and rolled down my window after an agent yelled, 'Move! I will break your effing window!' His first instruction. Agents on all sides of my vehicle yelled conflicting threats and instructions that I could not process while watching for pedestrians. Then the glass of the passenger side window flew across my face. I yelled, "I'm disabled," at the hands grabbing at me, and an agent said, "Too late." I felt immersed in a pattern, and I thought of Genoa Donald, an autistic black man killed by police during a traffic stop in 2021. I remembered Mr. Siberio Villaega Gonzalez, who was killed by ICE in his vehicle last year. An agent pulled a large combat knife in front of my face, which I thought was for cutting me, and later learned was used to cut off my seatbelt. Shooting pain went through my head, neck, and wrists when I hit the ground face first and people leaned on my back. I felt the pattern, and I thought of Mr. George Floyd, who was killed four blocks away. I was carried face down through the street by my cuffed arms and legs while yelling that I had a brain injury and was disabled. I now cannot lift my arms normally. I was never asked for ID, never told I was under arrest, never read my rights, and never charged with a crime.
That's a portion of last week's congressional testimony by Aaliyah Rahman, who's joining us now in Minneapolis. And in Chicago, we're joined by Alexa Von Brunt, director at the Illinois office of the MacArthur Justice Center, attorney for Aaliyah Rahman. Welcome both to Democracy Now! Aaliyah, let's continue with you. This testimony is horrifying. I'm so sorry what happened to you. If you can tell us what happened next. They smashed the passenger side of the window. They took this knife by your neck and cut off the seatbelt and dragged you out. If you can continue with your reaction to what was happening and then where they took you next.
Yeah. Thank you, Amy, for asking that question and for having us. Because what people saw in that video is, of course, horrifying and shouldn't happen and is a violation of rights. But what happened after the video is the thing that really sits with me. You know, what I saw in the detention center was truly horrific. And the weight of an experience like that really leaves you with a duty. From the point you're asking about, you know, I hit the ground a couple of times. The second time was face first, and I felt agents on my upper body, my back and neck. Shooting pain starts going through my head and neck and wrists. As we know, I already had a brain injury and had told them I was disabled before they did that. And when I get to the Whipple Center, this kind of dynamic of having a complete disregard for any human's humanity or living body was absolutely continued. Absolutely. You know, the first thing you see, first thing I saw anyway, arriving at Whipple, is lines of black and brown people chained together, being marched in the cold. I become one of these people outside in this outdoor loading dock as we are absolutely dehumanized, taunted, and not given medical care at any point. For me, not given disability accommodations like walking aids that I need. I can certainly talk about more of either of those things, but, you know, I was taken out of that place unconscious. And I believe that I lived because I had a cellmate who was willing to put herself in danger to bang on the door after I was unconscious. It was well over an hour from the first time we said this is an emergency because my speech had started to slur and my vision had blurred. And one of the last things I heard on that cell floor was my cellmate begging for medical care and somebody outside saying, "We don't want to step on ICE's toes." And when I opened my eyes at the emergency room, they told me I was being treated for assault wounds.
Well, Alia, again, we're so sorry for this horrific experience of all that you endured. So you did you in fact receive any medical care? And then also, did you have access to any legal advice? Were you able to access an attorney? Were you told that you were entitled to one?
I did not receive any medical care while I was conscious. When I arrived at the Whipple Center, I was already injured. I cannot lift my arms now, normally. I don't know how long that will be with me. You know, my body will heal or it won't. But it's important to me to fulfill a duty to folks like Mr. Mondragon, who you just mentioned, right? It is completely consistent with my experience to hear that the story of these folks, that he ran into a wall headfirst, is not true. Of course it can't be. Because these people do not regard human bodies as attached to humans. And so, no, I arrived injured and I wasn't given a medical screening. And, you know, from the second, you all can hear it in the video, from the second they first put their hands on me in the car, all the way through transport to the Whipple Center. From the moment I arrived at Whipple Center, I was asking for disability accommodations, like, did anybody bring my cane? I asked for a lawyer. I asked, am I being charged with something? I was not given a phone call. I was not able to speak to a lawyer. I was not told that I was charged with anything. I was lifted from my chair by my injured shoulders when I asked for a cane and prodded in the back and said, walk, you can do it. All the while having to worry that I'm going to fall down and hit my head again. I finally found a wheelchair. I was placed in it. After a good long time of asking for this and being told, we don't know if we have wheelchairs here, like, that is not an answer to that question. At a federal facility, you should know if there's a wheelchair there. And when I was placed in it, the man who was supposed to wheel me to interrogation paused for a second to take the time to say, hey, you were driving, right? So your legs do work. And you really have to think about a sentence like that, because that does not help anybody complete their job faster. If their job is related to immigration or public safety, it does help you complete your job if the point is to dehumanize and terrorize people into not speaking. Obviously, you know, that didn't work in my case. I'm here, I'm not going to stop talking, but no, I hear your question as a general question of, were any of your rights respected? Were your medical needs respected? The answer to that is no, and I think we have lots of testimony from folks inside these places that's consistent with that, and I'm very confused why we haven't immediately investigated these places and interviewed everyone who's been through them.
Alia, you said that they referred to the people at Whipple at the detention center as bodies, not people?
Absolutely. Before that, even, when I was placed in that SUV, after the videos where y'all can see me yelling, I have a brain injury, I am disabled, I am autistic, asking for help around that, the answer I got was laughter. And the driver radioing in, we're bringing in a body. And, you know, I really had to ask myself, what is going to happen to me before I get there, if that's what they're saying? And when I get there, you hear this word yelled. There are lines of people being marched. There are confused staff. Those agents had no concept of how to do the tasks that they were assigned, unless that task is dehumanization. They're really yelling things like, they're bringing in bodies, 7 or 8 at a time. There is no place to put them. They could not find an interrogation room for me because people kept saying, there's already a body in that one. There's already a body in that one. And again, I think human beings are not born calling each other bodies. So you have to ask, how did we get that way? And I read a lot of books. Anybody knows who studies history what happens when you have